Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Cosell's comment on that stylistic similarity yesterday.
I think in many ways he's stylistically similar to Purdy, other than the fact that he's not as good an athlete as Purdy. I think when you put him in the context of this offense, and that's all we can do because that's what he's going to be doing, he is a timing rhythm player. He can execute the kinds of throws that are asked to be made in this offense. Now, he obviously played last year and had some ups and some downs, which was to be expected. He was in a pretty dysfunctional situation. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to come out and be unbelievable and, wow, it's special. But the way in which he plays, and I think everybody was probably well aware when he came out in the draft that it seemed that Kyle liked him, because it's that style of quarterback. He's a timing rhythm player who gets the ball out, and that fits what Kyle wants.
Yeah, a distributor. Basically, somebody who is going to go out there and this is the play and we're going to run it and let's get the ball out. I mean, it's funny when Greg said it, because I can see where the way you read it, the way I read it.
He's a timing and rhythm player.
Yeah, that's like, I'm going to go out there and, okay, snap, 1, 2, 3, go, release ball. But when he says they're very similar except for they're different athletes, it kind of made me chuckle. Like, that makes them very dissimilar.
Well, he's bigger than Brock Purdy, yeah. So he probably won't have to go to the jump pass, for example, because he can probably see over the line. He's 6'3 and not 6'1, and it's funny that you portray him as, you know, not being able to run. He's been able to run in his career at times. He may not be as athletic as Brock Purdy and able to scramble and break the pocket and do all those things. We'll see. We haven't seen him in the construct of the 49er offense just yet, but I do think that he has the ability to be better than what he was in Jacksonville, just based on better coaching and better environment, better players around him.
I don't actually have this in front of me. Do you have numbers that would suggest that he can rush the ball a little bit when the pocket breaks down?
Just his career, he's gone for, what about, I have it right here, just rushing, he's gone for
419 yards.
145 attempts.
In 4 years.
Not a ton.
Yeah.
Most of that was obviously in his time in New England, his 3 years there. 2.3 per carry, which speaks to a lot of quarterback sneaks and probably some, you know, mediocre gains on non-designed runs.
888-957-9570. And we do have the poll is up on Twitter. It's on YouTube as well. From a YouTube standpoint, that's what I'm looking at right now. This appears to be a pretty freaking interesting discussion. And the question is, who's more important to the 49ers offense, Brock Purdy or Christian McCaffrey? Right now, 54% say McCaffrey, 46% say Purdy. So I'm on the side where if in a magical world we could just hand Christian a little turf toe and get Brock back in the game this weekend, I'd do that. Sorry, Christian, I love you, but yes, I would do that.
Count me out on
that. Well, I know, but I want to make sure people know that I'm not saying like I'd rather Christian's calf flare up. I'm with you on that. That's different.
Yeah, if you're going to give him the same injury, the turf toe.
He'll be back in 2 to 5, and you have to perform without him. I would give me Brock and Brian Robinson for a few weeks.
Yeah, not me. Yeah. And I think part of it for me is also not having George Kittle. So the import of having a weapon, Christian McCaffrey, becomes greater when you don't have George Kittle, because one thing we saw last year in the red zone, they really struggled. They didn't have Christian McCaffrey for the majority of the year. And already in the red zone, they got in once in this, actually twice, I guess, the second touchdown to Tonjes was in the red zone. So I feel like having McCaffrey when you don't have George Kittle is all more important.
Yeah, and again, I think important to remember, and to the point that that we were talking about a short time ago with the whole fantasy impact, you know, y'all in your PPR leagues and whatnot, Christian had this great game the other day. Like, average 3 yards a carry. He did not, like, the 49ers were not great in the run game. They were effective in terms of longevity. They were able to have the ball a lot. They had the time of possessions. I did not think that, like, holes were open and Christian was devastating. I did not see that for him or Brian. for that matter.
Yes, but
Seattle's a good defense.
They are, and I look at things a little differently beyond just like the average per carry and the numbers. They were able to run it effectively to where they almost always, almost every play, were able to get something. So they avoided big losses. Yep. They avoided, you know, being behind the sticks. And, you know, even though they didn't average much more than 3 yards a carry, they were able to establish it and do enough to where you got Brock Purdy into a lot of third and short and third and medium, and you were able to keep the ball and move the sticks.
Let's go to Rob in Philly. Hi, Rob. Thank you for the call. What's up?
Yo, brother. Look, I'm with you and I'm not with you at the same time. Like, this is not. I mean, what I get is not ideal. This is not good, and I'm with you that there doesn't seem to be any panic amongst, like, everybody seems to be like, it's like shoulder shrugging this a little bit. But at the same time, this is better than Brandon Allen. It should be a little better than Josh Dobbs, and it might only be like 2 games. I'm dead serious. Even if we even go 1-2. I still feel like we're going to be okay. You know what I mean? As long as Brock comes back all right, like, might as well get this out of our system now than in December.
Oh, I don't disagree with anything you just said there. I don't disagree with any of that. Like, and again, I really appreciate the word that you used there. It should. This should be better than Dobbs. This should be better than Brandon Allen. We don't know. We haven't seen it yet. But you're also under the pretense that this is going to be 2 games, and I hope you're right, but it might not be. And if you lose your quarterback for a third of the season, which is also on the table here, I don't think that the word disaster is too big of a word.
That's depends all. On how Mac does, and it depends on everyone else does. Sure. And, you know, losing George Kittle, for example, for 4 games, that could be a disaster.
It could be.
If you are unable to run the ball, if your running game is even worse because George Kittle's a great blocking tight end, and now you don't have him in the pass game either, that could be as much of a disaster as losing Brock Purdy, depending on how his replacements do.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I just, like, here's a fun one. And again, Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line kind of got my head here. When 408 says, how were people feeling when Purdy had to step in? No positivity, but he proved us wrong. Let's give Mac a chance before we start ripping him. I'll say it again. I'm not ripping Mac Jones. I have not ripped Mac Jones today. I have said everything that Mac Jones has already been in this league and others of all who have covered him have been lined up to say. He has been a very, not awful, average player. He is not, if we were to redo the life, he is not a first-round draft pick, okay? But I'm not sitting here telling you he can't do this or he won't do this. What I'm saying is that feeling that you just brought up when Purdy was coming in, Trey was out for the year, and Jimmy went down, that was panic. That was, oh, crap. Nobody knew at that point that Jimmy was out for the year. In that moment against Miami, everyone was just like, I mean, the quarterback's hurt. And that's the worst feeling in the NFL. And I feel that today. That's literally all I'm saying. I want Mac Jones to go win all of the games he starts. And he could. Of course he could. Even if there were behemoths on the schedule, even if Baltimore was coming to town this weekend, they could. Baltimore could lose to Cleveland on Sunday. They could.
You just never know.
It's a division matchup. I have no idea.
It's any given Sunday.
Like, I sort of expected a more appropriate level of, oh, crap, the quarterback's hurt. That's all. I really feel it. That's all.
Well, and part of it for me, too, is it's just week 2. And, you know, the caller was right saying, thank God this isn't in December. And I'll buy that because you know, you get into that spot. And even if you're possibly going to make the playoffs, you don't know if he'll be back for that playoff game at that point. This is week 2. And even if he misses week 2, 3, 4, and 5, and heck, maybe even week 6, well, you're in a spot then where you still at that point would have 11 more games. The schedule is easier in the second half, so you can weather the storm. There's no need to panic in week 2.
Well, no, there's no need. But what the hell's the fun of the NFL if we can't panic when the quarterback gets hurt?
The fun is watching your team on Sunday no matter who's out there.
Well, I'm still going to have fun and watch the game.
If it's Tungus and Farrell instead of Kittle, and if it's Mac Jones instead of Purdy, if it's Pinheiro instead of my beloved Jake Moody, I'm still going to root for the 49ers all the same.
Don't be mad just because you had to waste a transaction on your silly fantasy
pick. I got a good kicker now.
Who did you pick up?
That Rams guy, Josh Cardi.
I got Cardi. Thanks, Joe Montana. You don't even know people's names.
Ram kicker.
I got that dude from the Rams.
Josh Cardi. It's my guy. It's my kicker.
All right, today at 5, the Valkyries close the regular season in Minnesota against the top-seeded Lynx. Playoff spot is all locked up, but their seed is up in the air. A win tonight, they're 6. If they lose, they're 8, and they got to go against the Lynx again. You can hear the game on the Valks channel on the Odyssey app. We're sponsored by the California Office of Traffic Safety and Caltrans. And speaking of the Valks, our super fan, Brandon Pajemski, is going to join us next. And then we will continue on your calls, 888-957-9570. Would you swap out Christian for Brock if you could? This is Willard and Dip.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And Pods likes Dibs picks. Everybody does right now. We have changed it for the moment from Fade the Dibbers to Ride the Dibbers.
Yep.
We'll see how it works tonight. But first things first, we also got a Valks game tonight, and we have got the biggest super fan correspondent in the world for any sport, and it just happens to be Valkyries, and it happens to be Brandon Pajemski, and he joins us now on the River Islands guest line. Hey, Pods, what's going on?
What's up, guys? Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Where are you in your travels, by the way, as you make your way west?
I am back in the Bay. I just got here last night. That's why I couldn't make it yesterday.
Travel day.
I'm back in. Yeah, travel day yesterday.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so give us the word on... okay, you going to work with him for a second? Okay. Hang tight. We're going to work on some technical difficulties with Pods.
Okay.
And then we'll get back as they get ready, about an hour away from playing their own game. And, yes, the playoffs are already clinched, but this is kind of a... I'm hoping Minnesota mails this one in tonight.
Well, if they do, then they would face Minnesota in the...
No. I want Minnesota to mail this one in.
Right.
So that they wouldn't face Minnesota.
Gotcha, because then they'd be the 6th
I want the
Valks
to win and move up to the 6th.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I see what you're doing over there.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what's on the line tonight. The Valks are already in the playoffs. But if they win tonight, they're the 6. If they lose, they're the 8. And they can just basically stay right there in Minnesota.
Yeah, which would be,
cancel the plane flights if they lose.
Yes, I mean, I wonder if they packed accordingly or if they would actually fly back and then head back out there for the Sunday game, the game one back in Minnesota. That's always an awkward one where you don't want to just assume that you're going to stay there and pack for the additional days because that kind of is a negative self-fulfilling prophecy.
What is the date on that? When does the Valkyries...
It says Sunday.
First playoff game is Sunday?
All first-round game ones take place on Sunday.
I ain't flying back to tonight if you got... No, you stay. You stay. If you lose, you stay.
Well, then you would have to have packed accordingly.
Yes.
And I guess it also makes sense if you win and you're the 6th seed, you'll be playing Sunday elsewhere anyway. You'll be out that way, right? It'll be either...
It'll be Atlanta or Vegas, I think, right?
So, yeah. I mean, I guess you might as well pack and just either fly to Vegas. It'd be cool, though. You go ahead and win and you get to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
A couple days off in Vegas.
A couple nights in Vegas.
Yeah, or L.A.
Let's
also
go,
fun.
Ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's what they're looking at, and so I'm hoping that Minnesota, which has already clinched the number one seed, rest your girls, okay? Rest your ladies, and take a night off. You've earned it.
Perhaps.
Great job.
Unless you think that you've got ownage on the Valks, and then you go out and beat them, knowing that you've beaten them every time, and then you would get them again on Sunday in your house. Either way, if you're Minnesota, you know you're home on Sunday, so you're not that stressed about it.
I do want to ask, look, we're going to have to ask Pods about this, and I think we might be back with him here in just a sec, but I do want to ask Pods about the playoff game being at SAP Center in San Jose. I also want to say to SAP Center and the entire city of San Jose, like, it's not your fault. It's not about you. It's actually awesome that that ended up being available to the Valkyries. But just so much of what the Valkyries built this year was based on the environment they created.
Right.
It had a name, Valhalla. Like it was, and it was such a thing. And we keep trying to tell you, this is nothing to do with any corporate interests or anything. I'm telling you, as a person who went to a game, oh my God, the environment, it surprised me. It was incredible, incredible. To make it all the way to the playoffs and not have that be there for the first round is a bummer.
Big time.
It's a bummer.
And it's just big business, and that's the way it works. And Chase Center had already booked out the tennis event before the Valkyries were even a thing, which is amazing when you think about how far in advance you have these events planned and you have these events booked out. And so I wonder about next September if the people at Chase Center haven't already decided to make sure you block off a little bit of time just in case the Valks are able to do it again.
Yeah, I would imagine that Joe Lacob has carved out a little space for next year, because if you're going to make the playoffs in year one, you got to be thinking positive about making the playoffs in year two, especially with all the injuries they dealt with this year.
Yeah.
In theory, they should be even better next year. All right, back out to Pods on the River Islands guest line, reconnected as we talk to our favorite Valkyries superfan correspondent. Pods, you got us? We good?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sounded much better. Perfect. All right, so what is, in your opinion, the mental side of a game like this? You have two teams coming together. Everyone's in the playoffs. Seeding is kind of at stake, though. So, like, how aggressive do you think these two teams actually play this thing?
Well, I'll start from the Valkyries on a win, and I think they'd rather not play Minnesota in the playoff. But on the flip side, I think Minnesota honestly wants to play us, so I think they're going to play their players and try to play us, just because I'm not sure the record against the Seattle Storm, but I know it's going to be either us or them who plays Minnesota, and I think Minnesota would rather play us, honestly. But for me, going into the game as the Valks, I'm just trying to get away, because that's all I can control, and that just lowered in me.
As a player, are those things that you consciously think about going into a game, or is it just something you completely just block out of your mind, possible playoff machinations and all the rest?
I mean, it's definitely thought about. I think it's more so thought about between coaching staff, front office, things of that nature. I obviously haven't been fortunate enough to be in a situation yet where I get to kind of dictate, should we win or lose this game, depending on who we play. But I think I'm always going to try to win and get the best out of everything.
Brandon Pajemski with us here on Willard and Dibs. Pods, we got to get a reaction from you on the fact that this scheduling conflict arrives and the Valkyries make the playoffs and their home game will be at SAP Center in San Jose. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I heard you say it's just kind of what has been built off of Valhalla. The crowd, the environment, all sellouts through all 22 games. And to not have that is going to be a little bit different, but, you know, I don't expect anything less than a sellout at SAP Center. I know it's a great venue. Been to a few hockey games down there. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit different feel, but I know everyone's going to show up because it's the first playoff game.
Have you already made your arrangements to be there in your usual courtside seat for that playoff game?
Yes, I will be there.
It's big. It's big, and I wonder if how they're going to turn the teal that they normally have down there into the light purple or the lavender that the Valks come with. Have they asked you for any design ideas going into that playoff game?
No, they haven't, but I know, obviously, Joe will be there, and I'm sure Joe has voiced his opinion on what he thinks should be different, and I know something will be try to make it as similar as possible to Valhalla as they can. Obviously, everybody knows it'll be different, but it'll definitely be loud and rocking here for sure.
Are you saying, Brandon, that Joe Lacob is usually forthright with his opinion?
I mean, hey, the man's the boss. He's the owner. His words mean a lot, so it's always kind of whatever he says goes.
Hey, I want to ask you this. Just like, let's take a step back again. I know that we've already all kind of had it sink in that the Valkyries made the playoffs in their first year, which is incredible. You could answer this a bunch of different ways, but I wonder what comes to the front of your mind first. How'd they do it?
I think collectivity, different ladies every night stepping up, You've had the consistent pieces that have been there all year. I think Veronica played in every single game, started every single game. Our all-star went down midway through. Things could have, you know, flipped upside down for us, but we found a way to make it a positive. From the ladies that we signed only for hardship contracts to just the girls that have been there the whole time. Everybody's just collectively stepped up and did their part, but I think everybody's just bought in defensively, and they know that they can hang their hat on that, and they did so for the majority of the second half of the season. But now, you know, some of the offense is starting to click.
Do you see similarities in style of play with what you guys do? Because I'm just looking, and they led the league in percentage of the points that came from the three. Very good defensive team as well. Is that the mentality of the Valkyries? Is it similar to what you guys try to do with the Warriors?
I think there's some similarities. Obviously, personnel becomes a huge part of it. We have Steph who shoots the most, you know, threes a game, close to every year. So that comes from a lot of it. But I think from an analytics perspective, everything's so numbers-based. You know, teams both in WNBA and NBA want threes or layups, or threes or paint shots, rather. And they know that that's the most points per shot that you're going to get. So you can see that. Obviously, Natalie's probably trying to enforce that more just because it's her first year and she's trying to, you know, lay some groundwork of what she wants as a coach. And so to see that, and then to see them knocking their threes down, because I remember the first couple games I went to and I was like, wow, we're like 1-for-12 right now. But now, you know, they're having games where they're making 12, 15 threes. So it's been cool to see.
Pods, I know everybody's staying in the moment and hoping they do really well in the playoffs. But a first year like this sets them up for what going into next year?
It sets them up for an expectation, and it also sets them up that they're not a team that's just going to be pushed over because we're new. It gives us a good, you know, wherever the season ends, whether it's, you know, after the first round, we make it to the next round, the finals, whatever it is, there's always going to be another expectation that I know Joe and the front office is going to want to accomplish. But it also shows to the rest of the league, like, hey, these expansion teams are for real, and we expect a lot out of our players. And I think going into the second year next year, it's going to be a great year for us.
Brandon Pajemski, the Valkyries superfan correspondent with us every week here on Willard and Dibbs 95.7 The Game. And obviously we do one big Warriors question at the end, and here's mine, because you just used the word expectation. Now let's transfer that over to the Golden State Warriors. Realistically, fans, what should their expectations be of this coming year?
I think a lot of winning. You look at the All-Star break and beyond last year, our record, I don't know what it was, but it was pretty good amongst the league. To have a full year of our squad, whoever it may end up being, you know, you're going to have your main three pieces in Steph, Dre, and Jimmy. And so to have those three for a whole year together, I think it's going to be great. I think, you know, fans can expect a lot of winning. It'll probably look similar to the second half of the year throughout the course of the year. But everyone's goal is the championship, and everybody knows that.
I mean, Pods, you know, when you put that out there, everybody knows the greatness of those three players. But how do you answer it when someone says, like, is it realistic to be optimistic when those three players are all over 35 years old?
I mean, I think so. I know that those guys, when it comes playoff time, I feel like their body resets in a way, and their mentality. They look at every series as just how can we get four games. And it's different in the playoffs. We've experienced it last year. I got to see how much harder it is, how much more intensity it is. And I know, you know, and they know they only got a couple, you know, 3-5 more years, whatever it is, left in the tank. So it's like, we're there. We make it to the playoffs. They're going to give it all they got.
Pods, great to have you. Welcome back to town, man. And thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Okay. Playoffs next week for the Valks. There it is. Brandon Pajemski, Valkyries superfan correspondent. He will be courtside SAP Center for the playoff game.
Tuesday or Wednesday, according to the notes. Sunday it all begins either in Minnesota or in parts beyond, depending on how they do here
Atlanta,
in the next couple hours.
Vegas, whatever. Yeah, this is one of those weird ones kind of at the end of the year where nobody, like, need it, but – In theory, the way they're talking about it, Minnesota Lynx get to choose their opponent. It's a little disrespectful to say it that way.
Right.
As if they can just win the game because they want to. But if they want to play the Valkyries again, play hard. If they don't want to play the Valkyries, then tank that sucker.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's that cut and dry if you're Minnesota. Like, you probably feel confident against just about anybody, but I think they've beaten the Valks every time this year, 3-0. So
that's correct.
You beat them a fourth time, and they stay, and you get to play them again on Sunday. You probably feel good against anybody, but 4-0 would be the kind of ownage that you'd want to just go ahead and keep that team around.
And he said, Pods was like, I don't know what their record is against the Seattle Storm. The record is 2-2. Minnesota was 2-2 against them this year. They are 3-0 so far against the Golden State Valkyries. However, Dibs, you spoke about confidence, and I'd like to transfer your confidence to a different spot. I've never seen you actually this confident in my life because you are 5-0. You are
5-0.
This is a completely new year. You have come out incredibly hot. If somebody wants to point to the breaks at the end of the Niner game or the Bills game, they can do that, but that's betting. That's how it works. And my partner is 5-0. But now it's week two. And so you know you're only as good as your last pick.
Yeah, true.
And your most recent pick is about to happen right now. Let's do it.
It's time for
Say the Divers.
Please explain.
Nostra Diblis gives out his pick. You bet against it. You make money.
Cash me out one time.
It's that simple.
Hey, Dibs, your pick stinks.
Dibs, what's the lock of the day?
Well, the number is in, Dibs. Yep. There's been a little movement on it, a little back and forth. There's a significant half point that will not be involved in this game tonight. The official number is in. The Green Bay Packers hosting the Washington Commanders. It's a sexy matchup. It's Thursday Night Football, and the home team gets the stock 3. Packers, -3. Dibs.
Well, this one is it's pretty easy because I've got Jaden Daniels on my fantasy team, and so I really like Washington. I like them a lot. God, they looked good at times in the opener. Debo Samuel making his presence felt, and Washington's a team that I've got a close eye on. However, when you look at Thursday night games and you talk about the road team, they're both on a short week. I know that.
Chart.
One team has to travel, the other team doesn't. Washington is the traveling team going to Green Bay. I know they're out with a couple of offensive linemen missing, but we're just going to go with the home team here. We're taking the Packers, and we're going to lay the 3. Goo-goo! Thank you. You guys can clap it up. You can do whatever you need to do. I'm 5-0.
I'm right here.
Can't get to me right now.
I'm looking at you.
Is Lucas awake back there?
Yeah, he's looking at me. He shook me. I tell you, Lucas and I during this segment have like a little pitcher catcher thing that goes on, and he shook me off. He shook me off.
Like, we're not going to fade
the
Dibber?
We're not doing it. Like, he gives me a little, like, I'm out.
You guys are riding the Dibber with the Packers?
Lucas is riding the Dibber. You riding the Dibber?
Oh, I'm riding.
He's riding the Dibber.
I'm right.
You didn't hear me clap.
Grandy with a hat on?
You can't even do this. I rode with you on 3 of the 5 picks already this year.
Yeah, that's fine.
So
I don't need y'all to be with me or against me. I'm just curious where y'all stand.
Grandy?
I'm fading.
Yeah!
All right. Fade the Dibber. It's a weird one because the two offensive linemen are out, but Thursday night, I do, and I don't have the exact metrics on it, but...
Why not? I thought you were deep dive.
I'll do the deep dive. I did some other dives today, but the road team on a double chart week, it feels to me like they're at a pretty significant disadvantage.
Washington Commanders and Green Bay Packers. It's two teams that I actually thought were kind of ripe for just like good teams, but... Right, for a little setback from where they were last year.
You have
year.
Washington out of the playoffs this year.
I do?
I think we did that in the our preseason chit chat on the air.
It was Green Bay that I said.
Out.
Yeah. No, I think Washington goes. I had Green Bay out, but boy, they looked impressive last week. They looked good last week. But then again, you know what I always need? Like, this is why week two I always say week one is really, really tough in the NFL because we haven't seen a damn thing. Sure. We're just going on perceptions. Week two is even a little bit harder because we think we know, but you don't know.
The Colts and the Raiders are awesome.
So we
Dolphins stink.
Right.
I mean, and they might. But
maybe that was just that game.
Sure.
Maybe that was that matchup. Maybe that was that day. I don't know. So when we go, ooh, the Packers, dude, they whip the Lions up and down the field, and the Lions are really good. What if they're not? What if the Lions were a product of their coordinators who are both gone? I don't know. I don't know yet. So week two, you got to be really careful because you head to the window and you think you know all kinds of things, and you might not know Bubkiss. So I think both of these teams are really good. I think both of their quarterbacks are really good. I think the home team on Thursday night means something. But outside of that, yeah, I could have been convinced either way. I'm going to ride the Dibber.
Okay. Yeah, trying to get to 6-0.
6-0 is a little, it gets a little scary because you're like, dude, you're going to lose one at some point.
For sure. And these are just the games.
I'm glad you admitted that.
Well, like last week, for example, I pick every game against the spread in a pool that I'm in. And last week I went 12-4.
That's a great week.
Very good. But I mean, I lost four games. So it's a little arbitrary the way that we do this because I picked the Thursday, the Niner. And then
Sunday.
And then the Monday.
And Monday. And you did a bonus because we also had a Friday last
week. And
there's
going to be two Mondays
two
coming
Mondays.
Up.
So. Yeah, we'll worry about that on Monday.
Yeah, it's a little bit arbitrary in that, you know, I do pick all 16 games in my pool and I could go 0-4 on Fade the Dibber and get the other 12 right.
You could.
It doesn't often happen.
It didn't work that way, though.
Which is funny because I think now, after last year and including this year, I might be exactly at 500 or darn near it.
And keep in mind, any gambling hot streak. I would say any. This happens all the time. People go, start blowing on the back of their fingernails whenever they go on a little roll, or if you hit a parlay where you get 3, 4, 5 picks all right, or we get a text from Guru because he hit a 73-pick parlay, or if he actually missed but came close and he wants to send it to us, Guru, we love you. You know what I'm saying? Any of those things, if they ever happen, you got lucky. You got some breaks, and you're big enough to admit that the Bills, they got their butts kicked all night long. And then a godlike figure fumbled a football. And the snowball started going the other way. And you won the game.
You could look at all
like
of them.
By like a point. What was
Jake Turgis caught a touchdown pass on a ball that was thrown really to no one.
And then Sam Darnold fumbled.
And Caleb Williams missed not one but two wide open receivers for plays that would have prolonged drives. One of them was a walk-in touchdown. I think was that DJ Moore?
DJ Moore.
Down the left side, and that is a touchdown, and I lose that one as well. But, you know, it's gambling and it's football. Sometimes you're the nail, sometimes you're the hammer.
Dibs, the running tally from last year and this, you are 33-36-1.
So still fighting to get back. 5-0, and I'm still clawing to get back to 500.
Still
300. I'm like the Giants.
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
I mean,
Dibs just start hitting. Your OPS is like 1,103.
Giants go 13-4 over a 17-game stretch, and they're, what, two above?
Yeah, two above.
Good Lord.
Also, only two back.
Sure. Ish. Plus, they lose the tiebreaker.
Yep.
So, no Mets tonight, right?
No, I don't
it's
think
so. Off for both?
Yeah, okay. I think so. I don't know. Do the Mets play tonight?
The Mets are still playing Philadelphia, and they're up 4-0 in the second inning.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I was in a way better mood 10 seconds ago.
Oh, sorry.
That hurts, yeah.
I didn't even know that they played. You know what they need? They need one of them Schwarbombs.
They might need four of them.
They get a little Schwarbomb in there, and they'll come back. Those Phillies can hit the ball. All right. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Here's the deal. We got an hour and 20 minutes left to go on this show, and we would like some heavy Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey action. Because here's what we're talking about. Brock Purdy is out for 2 to 5 weeks. My take, I don't think the 49er fan base sounds panicked enough. That's not to say Mac can't win or Mac's going to just totally tank. But when the quarterback goes down, I would have thought there would have been more concern. Not the questionable concern that we're hearing. More concern. I think that means either A, you're not that into Brock, or B, you think Kyle Shanahan is uber, uber great as a head coach. But it led us to the conversation of, would you rather Christian's out or Brock is out? Which one's more important to the offense? We'll take your phone calls right now. 888-957-9570. This is Willard and Dibs.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Best in Jacksonville, what was he really good at?
That's a very difficult question.
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
That was a pretty great moment. Rick Ballew was on earlier. It's a great question.
What was he really good at?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all you need to know. All you need to know. He couldn't even come up with anything. I mean, oh, by the way, there is one really. You're going to see a quarterback performance this week.
Yeah.
You're going to see one in New Orleans on Sunday. You're going to see one hell of a quarterback. It's not Mac Jones, it's Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler.
You don't believe me? Ask the defensive coordinator of the San Francisco 49ers, Robert Saleh.
This quarterback, I'm telling you, he's going to be a household by the end of the year. This kid's pretty good. So he's a twitchy athlete. He's got a hell of an arm. He's very decisive in his decision-making as he goes through his progression. And he's accurate with the football. So they gave Arizona everything they could handle.
Now, I will say this. Grandy told me.
He's going to be household.
Well, Grandy said, Robert said he's going to be a household name. He didn't say that. He said he's going to be a household.
He's going to be household.
Which means maybe he's going to not have a job. He's going to be at home. He's going to be home after the year.
He's
going to
be household.
Because he's not going to be in the playoffs, so he'll be household bound.
He could be on house arrest. He could be a household product. He could be homebound, like you're saying. He could be a number of things.
He could actually be a household.
He could be.
I don't know.
He's going to be household. Yeah. I like that. That's a good...
Let's hear it again.
This quarterback, I'm telling you, he's going to be a household by the end of the year. This kid's pretty good. So he's a twitchy athlete. He's got a hell of an arm. He's very decisive in his decision-making as he goes through his progression. And he's accurate with the football. So they gave Arizona everything they could handle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did give Arizona everything they could handle. I like it when people call athletes twitchy.
Yeah.
That didn't used to happen.
He's
That's
twitchy.
Kind of a newer thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's twitchy. He's accurate with the football. He's going to be a household.
He went, they threw the ball 46 times against the Cardinals, the Saints. 46 pass attempts. And some of them got completed.
Right. I'm sure a number of them got completed.
27 of them.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good percentage.
For 214 yards.
Wow, that's not a lot. I was going to say not even five.
4.7 yards per attempt.
I actually did hear a crazy stat. I think it was yesterday.
What is it?
Spencer Rattler was the most accurate quarterback in the league in week one just by, there's some metric in the analytics that
ball placement.
What percentage of your throws are off target. He only had 2% of his throws that were off target.
Huh. Why did they miss so many?
Rashid Shaheed?
Did he drop a bunch?
I don't know.
He caught 6 for 33 yards. Yeah. Anyway. Watch out for their tight end, Juwan Johnson, who I think actually led tight ends in catches and yards of all tight ends for week one. He had 8 catches for 76 yards. So
yep. Yeah. And he got claimed on waivers in our fantasy league.
I'm sure he did.
Because I'm shopping for a tight end.
Oh, are you?
I lost them both, I think. If Evan Engram doesn't play, I have George Kittle, and I don't think he's going to play. I don't like his chances.
Let me see if I can help you out.
Hit my message line. I'm the one who picked him up.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Call my message phone.
Hang on. Let's see. Would you like to do a trade? I picked up someone. Because, yeah, I have Colston Loveland, and it didn't really impress me very much. So I picked up that little kid from the Browns, Fannin, who got a bunch of catches.
Nice.
The rookie.
Yeah, very good.
Harold Fannin.
Harold Fannin, yeah. I might just go with Tonjes. I'll probably pick up Jakey T and hope that he gets to eat again.
Jake didn't get picked up in our league? Nobody,
no.
Nobody picked up Jake Tonjes in a Niner fan league?
16-team Niner fan league.
Jeez.
Yeah, not all good owners Lord. Are Niner fans. Like Spinoni, not. Guru, not. Ken, not. You've got Raiders, Cowboys, and Dolphins, respectively.
That's three of the 16.
Steiny, not. That's
well,
four.
Steiny's not a fan of anything.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's a clean four of the 16.
Which means we have a normal size league that's all Niner fans. I would have thought somebody had more faith in Mac Jones than that. Just me.
Yeah.
That's what I would have thought.
I don't think Mac got picked up either.
Well, no, but that's who he's throwing to. Jake Tonjes. Boxer and Gerson work injury attorneys text line. Let's throw some of these at you. Rat-a-tat-tat. Again, obviously, we're talking about who do you think is more important in the Niner offense, Brock Purdy or Christian McCaffrey? Let's see. 925. Can't lie, guys. I'm going to the game against the Cardinals, and I'm definitely not as excited. 707. I think Brock is a very good quarterback, but CMC is possibly one of the best to ever lace him up. Easy no-brainer. 707. If fans don't believe in Brock, they are delusional. Brock is the best Niner quarterback since Steve Young. And then just recently, 510. I'd rather have Brock play. So, I mean, the opinion feels pretty split on this. Let's go to Spencer in Oakland. And find out if his last name is Rattler. Hi, Spencer. Thanks for calling.
No, my last name isn't Rattler. And I don't like rooting against Spencers because, you know, we are a rare bunch. But I will this weekend. You know, I think that your question, who do you believe in? As far you either don't believe in the quarterback very much or you believe in the head coach a little too much. I think more like. For me, I kind of believe in Saleh. So I'm taking a third option there, Alex. And I think that I really like that, you know, if I'm feeling adventurous, I have a piece of toast. You know, I heard that interview with his mother. I think Nick Bosa is looking really spry this year. And I think he is looking to have a big time rebound. He had a great first game. I think Fred Warner, looks spicy as ever. And I really think that defense is going to be something special and surprise a lot of people. When I look at the stats for week one, I mean, it was 50-50. I mean, the balance on offense was there, but I think this week, Shanahan just don't mess it up. Like, it should be three runs for every pass, and every pass should be on play action, and we should have a lot of checkdowns to McCaffrey. I mean, it should be let the defense go out there. I have a feeling the defense is going to get us a score this week.
Okay.
I do. They passed it, I think, two-thirds of the time. Last week the Saints did, and I think that bodes well for some sacks. I think that bodes well for you know, potential turnover or two, and just don't mess it up on offense. Lean on the run game. Lean on what this offensive line does well, which is blocking the run game. I don't know that there. I see some holes there. You know, when we're pass protecting. So I think you got to play to your strengths this week. It is the Saints, but if you're the Saints, you have to be looking at the Niners and say, man, there's no better time to play them there now, is there? So they're going to come into this game kind of like, okay, let's go steal one. So I really think this week is just lean on what strengths you have left. It's definitely not the passing game with a backup QB and basically everybody else hurt. Lean on your running game. Lean on your defense. Saleh, come with something special. Deeb, you know, just come with something special this week. That's all I got.
Yeah, Spencer, I think thank you. It's a really, really good call. But here's what I would say about it also is I just think this is the classic thing that happens when you win in sports. It's like Men in Black. Flashy thing.
And you overrate and you underrate. You overrate how good the defense is because they beat Seattle.
Y'all acting like the Niners looked good last week. I got news for you. They didn't.
Oh, the defense did. Absolutely.
They looked good. Yes. For most of it. And not all of the players and not all of the game against a Seattle team that has now got a defensive head coach, a brand new quarterback, a brand new receiving core almost entirely. Like, that's kind of what you and I were just talking about 10 minutes ago. Seattle might be awful. I have no idea.
The Niners might be phenomenal.
Maybe.
It's probably maybe somewhere in between.
Yeah. So, like, I get that what Spencer just said, I think, is beyond fair, and he's obviously a good fan who knows a thing or two about what he's watching. But at the same time, like, he started his call with, like, just don't mess it up. And I'm like, what is it? What is it that we're not messing up? You make it sound like, man, we got this Cadillac, just don't overdrive it. Do we? Do we?
Don't know what we have.
We don't know.
And every week it's going to be something different. And, you know, last week against Seattle, 36 runs, 35 pass attempts. Great. And you're not going to go to New Orleans and run it three times for every one time you pass it. That's not that sustainable. And that would tell me that you don't have faith that Mac Jones can go out there and at least be serviceable or be decent. Shanahan's not going to change the way he calls the game that much based on Mac in and Brock out. I don't think that he's suddenly going to go into a shell. And we always talk about the Jimmy Garoppolo playoff game where they only threw it eight times. And everyone wants to use that as an indictment on Jimmy Garoppolo. And I don't see it that way. I look at that game as an example of Green Bay being unable to stop the run. So why would you do anything other than run the ball? Oh, Raheem Mostert was a hot knife through butter. He ran it at will. They ran it at will. You didn't have to go out there and throw it. And eight attempts is pretty extreme. You don't often see that in a game outside of a monsoon or a snowstorm.
Or Air Force.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly.
Like,
but
yeah, run the wishbone.
In a pro game, you don't often see that. But for me, this game against New Orleans, you're not going to go in there and think, you know what, we need to run it 50 times because we don't want Mac to throw it.
I agree with you completely on that. Like, how many points did they score in that game? What's the final score of that NFC title game that you're referencing?
I think they got 40 on the board.
Yeah, like, I mean, it wasn't...
I know Mostert had four touchdowns, right, and Green Bay got some stuff late.
You're not talking about a situation where the Niners were like, let's grind it out, let's see if we can win 20-19.
It was 37-20.
37 points.
And it wasn't that close.
Yeah, so why, you're absolutely right. It's not an indictment on Jimmy Garoppolo as much as what you saw throughout his tenure as far as the game plan and what Kyle would do in moments when what was called for was taking a little bit of a risk, like push it a little bit, kind of like right before halftime of the Super Bowl when you had a bunch of time on the clock. And Kyle was like, no, we're just going to sit on this and go to halftime. And then after the game, acted like it was a no-brainer. Like, of course we wouldn't do that. What are you, crazy? When all of the NFL teams do that, all of the ones who have really good quarterbacks they trust. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.